Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Work Trends with Megan M. Biro. Whether you're here to network, learn, or share, we want you to have fun. During this live broadcast and Twitter chat, we'll discuss the future of work with smart and entertaining guests who value today's business and its impact on the world of work for the future. Stay tuned, because we start in 3, 2, 1.
Happy Wednesday. We got a kind of cloudy, overcast day here in 02139 Cambridge. I'm back home for a bit before I take off to HR Tech Connect in Florida, which I'll be co-chairing along with my old buddy here, Kevin W. Grossman. Excited to see all you if you're stopping by to see us there. This is kind of good timing for me to head out again to Florida, but welcome. I want to thank everybody for showing up here. Today we have a very exciting Work Trends event about a topic that is actually relatively new in the workplace intelligence. You are free to utilize the Twitters if you'd like. Maybe somebody can even get fancy with a hashtag. Let's start this conversation and party and movement, right? This is an innovative approach to looking at everything and everyone in the workplace and determining how all these moving parts and pieces are working together to bring about what we hope is a better and more productive outcome for everybody. So listen, I have two very good friends of mine here who have been with me on this whole digital transformation journey really pretty much since day one. I'm grateful to still have them in my life. And first off, we have Sean Murphy, who is the CEO of WorkIQ, formerly Switch and Shift, if you remember those days, right? WorkIQ, this is very exciting. This is our first opportunity to tell you more about it. So WorkIQ helps leaders raise their workplace intelligence through the art of creating a better experience of work that we hope drives results. So Sean is an accomplished writer. You can read his weekly column called Positive Business on Inc.com. His debut book, The Optimistic Workplace, Creating an Environment That Energizes Everyone, is out now. And also with us is the one and only Mark Babbitt, the CEO and founder of U-Turn. They are a social resource for young professionals. He's also the president of the leadership community Switch and Shift, soon to be known as WorkIQ. And you can read Mark just about anywhere. Entrepreneur, Forbes, HBR, and many other outlets. He's the co-author of A World Gone Social, How Companies Must Adapt to Survive. He was recently named one of Inc. magazine's top 100 leadership speakers. Welcome, you two.
I would say good morning, but I think it's afternoon where you are, right?
It is.
So
yeah,
good day to you.
A different time zone.
Thanks
for having us, Megan. It's great to be here.
You got it. Well, listen, let's start with you, Sean. What are you up to? Tell everybody, I mean, I'm sure, you know, a lot of our audience already knows who you are, but for those out here who are listening who are just getting to know you, tell us what's on your mind today.
Well, so you, for the past, I'd say, good year plus, Mark and I have been really heads down evaluating. All right, so Switch and Shift, which started as a blog, very successful, one of the 10 most read and socially shared leadership blogs, I think it's in the world. It just didn't reflect what we were actually doing outside of the online world. And so we did some soul searching, and the result of that is WorkIQ, or Workplace Intelligence. And so it's we are just now pulling the trigger and getting the word out about who we are now and what we do. And aside from that, finishing up the proposal for book number two, which I'm pretty excited about. It's going to be a much more difficult book to write than The Optimistic Workplace, but I'm up for the challenge.
Cool. And Mark, you know the audience pretty well, because when I travel, we now have Mark as my guy with the plans, my sub, right?
Well, it's kind of weird to be it's kind of weird to be on this side of the microphone. So, but I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, we've all heard Mark about IQ, of course, right? And we all know the importance of EQ or emotional intelligence in the world of work here. So, you know, we're hearing a lot more about leadership intelligence, LQ, but WQ? Tell us what's doing with this.
So WQ is a phrase that that Sean and I were using a lot in our consulting practice, and we would walk into a leader's office, and we would say, "Wow, really really high emotional intelligence on her. She's really going to do well." And we walk into a individual contributor's office and go, "Wow, good combination of IQ and EQ, but no LQ," right? We were using all these phrases, and it occurred to us that this workplace intelligence thing, this WQ thing, was having a major impact on our clients and certainly on our consulting practice. So we, about a year and a half ago, we really started looking at this and going, you know, there's something to this, because it isn't, you know, we talk a lot about company culture and workplace climate and leadership, and if God knows we beat in the engagement topic to death. And
what are you talking about? We have no idea what you're talking about. What's that?
You know, and in some ways, we've certainly talked about purpose-driven performance and the community building and what you're infinitely familiar with and social intelligence. But we talk about them as if they're not connected, they're not related. And you know, how
right.
For instance, how can you have a great company culture without a great leader, and how can you have a great online community without a significant level of social intelligence? So it occurred to us that there were these seven components that all combined together, especially Sean's favorite topic, the optimism in the workplace. You know, all of these things combine to form what we call workplace intelligence. And not coincidentally, the better a company is in all seven, the better place it is to work.
Yeah, and I think what I'd add to that is, so what we found ourselves helping leaders, and not just at the executive level, but those who are in the middle of the organization, working with them to improve what we ultimately have come to call the experience of work, which is not necessarily the employee experience, but the experience of work. What is it like for employees, managers, executives?
Yeah.
What is their daily experience of work? And if it's really not good, which we know predominantly 70% of people have a negative work experience, what can someone in the middle of the organization and or at the top of the organization do to improve that experience?
Well,
and so that's
Sean,
where these seven elements come in.
Thank you for bringing this up, because why do we always forget middle managers? And yes, that's a sweeping, somewhat judgmental seeming statement, but it's true. Like, I feel like there's always a lot of talk about employees and leaders. To your point, what about what's in the middle? What about what people are really feeling? I give you both a lot of credit, actually, because it sounds like you're really trying to solve a problem here. Like, let's move beyond, like, employee engagement. Let's talk about how to affect what affects everybody. And that's what you're feeling. And there's a lot of emotional stuff going on with this, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we're all really searching, I think, for a way to improve the experience of work. I know I am every day with brands and people alike, you know, to change company culture and climate for the better. I know we've been in this fight for many, many years, right? All of us. But we seem to focus on one aspect of the culture, right? Engagement, leadership, instead of seeing the big picture. So are you saying this is where workplace intelligence comes into play?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think what we found is that, you know, ideally, as Mark said, the whole organization does well in these seven areas. The reality is, to do well in these areas, it takes a very intentional, orchestrated effort. But also there's a sense of organic growth and exploration with it. And let me give you an example, because that sounds really kind of flowery and like, what the hell did
you
say?
I know. You know what I was just going to say? I was going to say, please, please do not have him say it takes a village. or I'm done.
Yeah, no, 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 no.
You didn't
yeah,
say
no,
that.
No.
Thank you.
So what Mark and I really have found to resonate and start to actually move the needle is creating what we call contagious pockets of excellence. So let's just say, Megan, you in your unit, you're like, all right, my employee's experience of work, it's just not a good experience for them. They're, you know, it's toxic or it's negative or people are just really stressed out. Let's go with that. And you're like, I got to do something because I'm going to lose my good people. And we're not performing as well as we need to. We're behind on a lot of projects. So the workplace intelligence comes into place and says, okay, which lever is best going to help you move your team's experience in the direction that you need? Because what you need might be different than what another manager in another area needs. And it's not a one-size-fits-all. And a lot of it boils down to the quality of the leader's ability to be, to be a leader. You know, how well does that manager lead? And so if you're great and I'm not so good, your employee's experience will likely be better than my employee's experience. So we like to come at this from a let's go where the greatest work happens and help improve that experience to move the organization in the direction it wants to go, rather than saying, let's just start from the top, work all the way down, and we know that doesn't work. It's expensive. It takes forever. Executives get, you know, I don't say if it's bored, but their attention span with it, just it's just mm-hmm. not there because it takes forever.
Right. Well, I have to say, I give you both a lot of credit because I have never heard the term contagious pockets of excellence. That's pretty cool. Seriously. I'm not, you know me, I can be humorous, but I mean, I'm being serious. I've never heard that. That's interesting. Mark, talk to us about some of the factors you look at to determine an organization's current level of WI, I'll call it, workplace intelligence.
Well, I think we've talked about a few of them. Certainly company culture plays, but so does workplace climate. You know, it isn't just about how we do the work. It's about how it feels like while doing the work, right? Whether you're remote or on-site or a 10-year veteran or the newest intern, and how it feels to go to work every day, what you're thinking when you're walking from the car to the front door every morning, that is a major mm-hmm. factor in how we experience work. And there's also some of the elements that we found are so important that aren't talked about very much. For instance, we talk about employee performance, but we don't talk about purpose-driven performance and how aligned is that employee's personal mission and values, a very personal thing. How well are they aligned with the company's values and stated purpose? And so that's a major factor. And some of the other ones are certainly this, we call it a community building, but it's more than that. It's really this feeling of belonging. I mean, do we feel like mm-hmm. we're contributing here? Do we feel like we're among friends here? And I know there's a lot of old white guys out there that say, I don't care if my employees have friends or not. I'm not paying them to make friends.
Yeah.
Right? I know there's some of that, but it's all the research, all the data on the planet shows that when we have that sense of belonging, a micro family, if you want to call it that, that we do better work.
I like that.
And
micro family.
And it really
that's
is
really cool
to the process. So, well, you know, here's the thing, Megan, is it isn't just about one aspect, right? The companies that have great cultures, they're typically a great place to work. Companies that have great leaders more than likely can be a great place to work. But if all these other elements aren't measured and they aren't accounted for and they're never discussed, especially at the executive level, but all the way down, as Sean said, to the middle manager level, where it's not the CEO that has the most impact on the employee. It's their direct boss. It's their supervisor.
Yeah.
And is that person just a narcissist, a control freak? Or are they a mentor? Well, that's obviously going to have a huge impact on all kinds of things, including leadership, engagement, being able to fulfill your purpose while you're at work, that sense of belonging, right? These things are all so intertwined.
So, Sean, I mean, give us the reality check, because I think, yes, this all sounds great. Does this mean that an organization has to be successful in each of these seven areas in order to be a great place to work? What's your thoughts on that, and how realistic do you think it is for us to be able to get brands there?
Well, yeah, it's a great question, because realistically, no. And here's the piece that I think is important. So, you know, the engagement piece, for example, where a lot of organizations are investing lots of money and time and measuring it and trying to get employees to be engaged, you know, that what the original research shows and the psychology behind it is that it's a very personal experience. So, you know, you might have pockets of engagement throughout the organization, and that could be good enough to create a great place to work. So it's really an ongoing exploration that an organization can take on and say, all right, so we've got to make sure we reduce our attrition rate. So how are we going to do that? Well, we're going to improve the experience of work. How do we do that? The best way to do that is to equip your managers in the middle of the organization up with the know-how to assess what is going on in their team and then focus on what they need to do in their area. Ideally, it would be great to have one big, massive effort, but again, it's just not cost-effective. It's not time. It's just, as I said earlier, the time for it just takes too long. So I think the best way to look at this is kind of through a diagnostic lens, and that is, let's make sure managers understand what are the influences on the experience of work and how are they influencing that, and then what can they do to improve that in these seven areas. Not all of them are going to apply. Some are more important than another. Some of them will take longer to course correct. Some could be low-hanging fruit.
Yeah. Now, I think that's a really real answer, and I appreciate that, and I know probably people in our audience do today as well, because, you know, you can't – the first thing to do is just communicate. And, I want to go back to the fact that you're going to the middle managers. You're going to people that matter greatly to get stuff done within the workplace. I think it's an awesome angle. So I know we've been talking a lot about employee engagement, right, for several, I would say, like, decades now, Sean. Yet the data shows, at least across the board, as we know, that engagement is really not improving. What are we doing wrong, in your opinion, and how exactly can WQ help on this front?
Yeah. So, you know, Mark and I had lots of conversation around, do we really want to throw our hat in the ring and help improve engagement? And we ultimately said, well, we can't ignore it. So what's going on here? So what we did is we went back to some of the originating researchers who dubbed the term employee engagement. And we wanted to understand, well, what was it that what led them to this term? And what they found has gotten lost in translation. So the initial idea was, for me to be engaged in my work, it comes and goes. It's like there are days where I'm really engaged and there are days where I'm not. There are hours where I'm really engaged and hours where I'm not. And what the original researchers said and found was that it's made up of three things: vigor, absorption, and dedication. How, you know, enthusiastic am I in doing the work? How do I have the capacity, whether it be environmental or me as an individual, to really get absorbed in the work? And am I really committed to this organization, to this team? So when you look at those three variables, I think what it does is it gives some insight to what an individual manager can do and what an organization can collectively do to make sure that, hey, have we designed the workplace to allow people to do some deep thinking? Do I, as a leader, know what excites you as an employee? If I have you working on stuff that you really don't give a rip about or is just so taxing or there's no progress in the work, those are things that are going to affect engagement. So it's engagement is a deeply personal thing, which goes back to the community piece, which is we've got to have this create strong relationships with employees in order to be able to understand what their needs are so that we can work with them and put accountability on them to make sure that they also get what they need to feel engaged.
Right. So, Mark, let's say that an organization is having a real issue with company culture and climate, as you like to term it. They want to improve both as well as their WQ. How do they get started, right? And then how do they know what area to focus on? And I guess I'll throw in a third question, and I hope you've had enough coffee today. Is this a product? And how are, you know, and is this for a certain, you know, size company? Just tell us your take on some of this.
So first of all, I'll say this, that there are so many initiatives out there to improve company culture, but nobody takes a look at exactly what their culture is now. They know what it says on the About Us page and the careers page of their website, but they haven't done any analysis. They haven't collected any data to show what their current culture is. And some of them haven't even reached out to their own employees, their customers, their stakeholders to find out what they'd like the culture to be. And so that's the first step is where do you stand now? And so we have an assessment tool designed by Human Synergistics that actually takes a look at that, and it can be done with as few as 15 people, and it's beyond relevant. It actually shows it's eye opening to look at that and say, holy crap, we're not even close. I mean, here's what we want to be, but here's what it really feels like to work here.
Yeah,
and here are our obstacles to success. So that is huge.
No joke.
Right? That's the start. And the other part of this, you know, and it gets right back to the employee engagement and the community building stuff, is let's stop manipulating our employees. I mean, why haven't we statistically improved employee engagement in North America over the last 30 years? Because we stopped actually listening to our employees, and we started trying to manipulate them through HR tech. And you know what? Nobody's going to improve engagement. Nobody's going to improve culture unless we start to hire managers, team members, leaders, executives who actually give a rat's ass about their employees and the mission. You can't take somebody who genuinely doesn't care about the people they're working with and turn them into an employee engagement expert. You can't make them be a mentor. You can't make them be a good leader. And that's why assessment is so important to begin with, because you can't just make this stuff up, right? I mean, 30 years we've been talking about employee engagement. Problem, we made no progress.
I think,
right?
Let's
take a different
open
approach.
Open up communication channels, absolutely. Now, is this product in your services towards a specific size company, or can a company that's a startup and small and lean, as well as large enterprise? I mean, do you all have a focus in that area?
Well, we've been very lucky there, Megan. We've worked with the newest startups and all the way up to major corporations like Blue Cross Blue Shield. There is no end right now to the awareness that's happening within companies. I mean, all we have to do is look at the retention or the, you know, how many times we really wanted that hotshot new employee, but he went somewhere else, or she decided to go be a leader for another company, right? All you have to do is look at that data, and people are starting to really figure out maybe we're not all that we say we are on the About Us page. Maybe we do need to improve. So everybody wants to jump in from the smallest companies. And here's another realm that's that actually is surprising Sean and I, is how many nonprofits are looking inward now and saying, wow, especially for a volunteer workforce, we really need to look at our workplace intelligence and our culture and our engagement rates and retention rates. And this is a big deal to us too. So it really is across the board.
What I would just add to that is
Sure.
Is that the experience of work doesn't matter if you are in a startup, a nonprofit, or you know, a major corporation or somewhere in between. If you have people showing up to do work for, to advance the company's mission and purpose, et cetera, then you should be looking at what is that experience of work and how can you raise your workplace intelligence. Whether or not it's something we at Work IQ would help with, it's still something that every single organization needs to be looking at, especially if they're interested in results, performance, growth, you know, profitability. You're not going to get the best of those if you're not getting the best of your employees.
Talk to me a little bit about two things that I'm passionate about, which would be community building and social intelligence. Tell us why these two segments are so important in today's typical workplace. And then, Sean, I just want to hear your take on it in general.
Yeah, so I'll add a little bit, but this is really the wheel in Mark's wheelhouse and the work that he did impart in his book, A World Gone Social, that, you know, the work experience doesn't, or the experience of work doesn't just happen when we are, you know, at work, right? We are talking about our employer online, positively or otherwise. And the community, yes, there's a community that happens when we're at work, you know, the community, the team that I'm a part of. But there's also, you know, your ambassadors, people who advocate for your company, whether they are current employees or they've left. So, you know, at the smarter organizations, LinkedIn is one of them, is you're looking at, okay, community can be global and can actually have a positive influence on our brand and a positive influence on how people understand how we try to help our customers. So focusing on that piece is important. And the social intelligence, well, I'll let you know, I'll kick that over to Mark because I think that's really his area of expertise along with the community building.
Well, here, Megan, as you know, everybody now has a personal brand, right? And some of us work incredibly hard to continually maintain and improve that personal brand. Well, there are executives of some of our biggest and best companies who haven't gone down that route yet, and they don't understand the impact their corporations, their collective social intelligence has on the world. And you don't have to be an expert to look at what's going on in Hollywood right now or Silicon Valley to understand that especially a leader's personal brand is directly tied to their corporate brand, right? And it's all falling apart all around us. And so we started calling this social intelligence because that's really what it is. It's not just the leaders, it's the collective brand and what we're doing out there to help move us to a positive light, even in times of stress, even when the social lynch mob is out there just ready to gang up on us.
Yeah.
Well, one of the best answers for that is the community, right? Something's going to go wrong.
You're right.
For all of us. But if you have that strong sense of community, the community is going to answer for you, and you don't have to pull a Harvey Weinstein and disappear and go talk about, you know, tangents. Your community's going to stick up for you.
We went there. Mark, you're speaking some truth right now. I love it. We're down, believe it or not, to about 60 seconds left, and then we're going to hop on over to the Twitters and continue this conversation. Mark and Sean, you know, it's been a pleasure speaking with you both, and, you know, thank you for your time, your friendship over the years. Both of you have been really good to me, as well as the talent culture community. So we're excited to learn more as we go here together. And anything quick you'd like to leave us with before we head on over to Twitter?
Let's do it.
I just want to say thank you, Megan. This is the site just launched a couple weeks ago, and we're just now getting out of here and talking about this, and we appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
Sweet. Let's do it. Talk to you both soon.
Thank you.